So we have some news.
Do we?
We do. We were charting very recently.
Wowee.
On the UK... not you, Jake, but on the UK comedy podcasts.
Ah, that's
which is
cool.
Fantastic. Yeah, if you want to get higher in the charts...
We charted on comedy and not on science or education.
I feel like that's accurate. Entirely accurate.
Yeah.
If you guys want to help us chart higher or help us keep on charting, which would be fantastic, the best thing to do is to leave us a review on
Your preferred app of choice.
Or your preferred app of choice. But please, just do it on iTunes.
iTunes, Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts, yeah.
Which is like 80% of our listenership anyway.
I mean, who doesn't use iTunes?
It's like... I think it's like 75 Apple, then 20% Spotify, and then the rest is just...
And then CastBox.
In that like 10%.
But if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, that would be absolutely fantastic. Before we start the show, I want to read out another email. This one is from Allison.
Hi, Allison.
Hello.
Hello.
So Allison says, meet the dogs of Chernobyl. Hi, I just listened to episode 9 on Chernobyl. Your comment about the dog cull reminded me about a news article I saw recently. Not all the dogs who were left behind were killed. Many survived and bred. There are estimated to be hundreds of stray dogs living in the exclusion zone. So I'm going to keep on going with that. Volunteers are now going into the area to capture, care for, and rehome these strays. And then Allison has left a bunch of links to some nice articles. And they've also said, it's not just dogs that are living in the exclusion zone. Due to the lack of humans, wildlife is also thriving.
Yeah.
Which is really true. I was watching a video on this the other day.
Were we watching that together? Because I also watched a video about
it. Oh, yeah. It was Kyle Hill, because science. He did a whole video on the animals and wildlife just thriving. Yeah. Because we haven't
It's caused some species to thrive in that area.
Despite the high levels of radiation, apparently humans are worse with the environment.
Yeah, they're better off with the radiation and without humans.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks, Allison.
Thanks for email.
It's really nice. If you guys want to send an email, you can send us one at scyguyspod@gmail.com.
That's scyguyspod@gmail.com.
Shall we start the show?
Yes.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jamp, and special guest, Jake Edwards.
Hello.
Hello.
None of this soft boy oo-oo crap.
Soft boy.
Not on my podcast, sir.
I'm the softest, most valid oo-oo boy.
Would you like to tell everyone who you are, Jake?
Hello, I'm Jake. My pronouns are he and they. Sometimes I make YouTube videos, although mostly not.
Perfect replacement for Luke, then.
Yeah, beautiful.
This week, we'll be talking about floating frogs and fun Friday nights.
Fun Friday nights. And floating frogs.
I don't like the weird sensual eye contact that you made with me then.
You were locked
on with Jake there.
Andrei Geim is a Russian scientist who started off levitating frogs, which set him off on the path to winning a Nobel Prize using some scotch tape and pencil lead. Scotch tape. It's like sellotape. You know scotch tape?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a brand.
Yeah, it's a brand of sellotape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, just a little bit of background on Andrei. I assume that's how you pronounce his name. So Andrei's a scientist from Russia. You can't call him Russian, though. He doesn't like that. He
doesn't like being called Russian.
No, he calls himself European because he's worked all around Europe. And he says, I think that's as specific as you need to get.
So he was assigned Russian at birth, but doesn't identify with being Russian.
He's trans-European, yeah. I'm going to give you guys a few facts on Andrei from his autobiography because he seems like just an interesting guy. I like the cut of his jib. So he fell down a 100-meter deep crevasse without a rope. He was called Russian for the first time at the age of 32. He studied intercontinental ballistic missiles, and he was a bricklayer north of the Arctic Circle. See, he's had pretty
that's a
varied life.
So, hold on. He fell down a 100-meter crevasse.
He fell down a big hole. Yeah.
Fell down a big hole. He was called Russian for the first time at 32.
Yeah, I don't know the story behind that. He refused to go into it in this autobiography.
The first time... right, okay.
So, in his autobiography, he started off with these facts about himself.
Right,
and then said, "I'm not going to go into any of these. Here's everything I did for my PhD."
That makes more sense. It wasn't a book about being called Russian at 32, no, falling down a hole.
He's an odd man. He's got a good sense of humor. He's also received a Dutch and British knighthood, not joint, two separate ones.
Two,
yeah, a Dutch. No, one Dutch and one British.
Well, yeah, so that's two.
Yeah, but not two from the Netherlands and two from...
No, two in total.
I'm just being clear. And here's a quote from him. He said, "I often repeat the phrase, I like individual humans, but I hate the human race. If you think, you probably share the same opinion."
Why is Luke not here for this episode?
This is why I'm reading this out, because this is such a Luke. This guy is right up Luke's alley.
Absolutely agree.
If you think, you probably share the same opinion. You see what we've done to the planet, how we destroy everything. When I hear about anything about global warming, especially when politicians or other scientists are raising questions about global warming, I switch TV channels. For God's sake, there's global warming, and yes, it's caused by humans. It really gets on my nerves how stupid we remain as a race.
Stupid.
Yeah, that sounds valid.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. So I'll tell you about the levitating frogs then.
Yes.
Right.
So...
to the meat of the episode. The nitty gritty.
As Andrew said, in my experience, if people don't have a sense of humor, they're usually not a very good scientist. So, you know, he got really curious about magnetism when he didn't have any equipment to continue his experiments at the Radboud University.
That university again?
Radboud.
Oh, yeah, we talked about this university. Yeah. With when Dan was here, we were talking about black holes. Wow.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
Wow, a recurring character. That's nice.
So this was university. This was in their Highfield Magnet Laboratory in the Netherlands. So one Friday evening, he set the electromagnet to maximum power and then just poured water right into the machine.
Sounds like a fun Friday night, if you ask me.
Yeah. He just wanted to see what would happen. He said he didn't remember why he behaved so unprofessionally, but he could see that the water got stuck in the hole.
Right.
So it was like levitating, little droplets of water just floating up. And he basically discovered that there was a feeble magnetic response in water, which could act against Earth's gravitational force, basically just levitating it.
Interesting.
So he kind of went around telling people that, and they were like,
nah.
Are you sure? I mean, that doesn't really seem right. Like, even other scientists weren't really sure if that was kind of what would happen. So to kind of prove his point, he decided to start levitating frogs in it. So as far as I'm aware, he took a frog from the biology department. He's in the physics department, obviously. So he took a frog from the biology department
Stealing.
And chucked it in the... He asked for it.
Oh, he asked for it.
And then chucked it in the electromagnet. And floated it. So it was in a magnetic field of about 16 Tesla. Just to put that in perspective for you, the strength of a fridge magnet is about 5 millitesla.
That's quite small.
That's very small.
That sounds small.
Yeah, so this was 16 Tesla. 0.3 Tesla is a solar sunspot. 4 Tesla is the superconducting magnet around the CMS detector at CERN. And 1.5 to 3 Tesla is the strength of the MRIs used in medical testing.
Did the frog not just, like, explode or something?
Frog was fine.
How? So he's just, like, chilling. He's just, like, having a little spa day, floating around with some water in like, a machine.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, right before he gets, like, cut open. He's just, like, having time of his life.
I don't think they cut... I hope they didn't cut the frog. They probably did cut the frog open. But it was a tiny little frog.
It's still a frog. Oh, like, poor little froggy. I mean admittedly, right, he probably had the best last day. That was the best last day a frog has ever had before being cut open.
My point being that they probably didn't cut open that little frog because it's too small to look inside.
They've got things for that, you know. Corey, when something's really small and you can't see it, scientists generally have things to mean they can see it. So I'm pretty sure they probably cut open that frog at some point.
What would be the point of cutting open the frog? What can we learn from just cutting open a frog?
I don't know, things about this frog biology. He took it from the biology department. He probably went and put it back. And then
why
did like,
they have the frog then?
Ooh, let's cut this one open.
So they could have had it for any number of reasons.
I mean, they might.
I'm not going to entertain.
They might have done it unlikely. Just to see what the magnet did to its organs. You never know. They could have like shifted around a bit. Could have done something real weird.
Okay.
You could learn something from that.
Well,
I'm going to say he got cut open.
In what I read, they said that he went on to join his little friends again.
Nope. Died.
Okay, good. So it's possible to levitate magnetically every material and every living creature on the Earth.
Everything.
Not at once.
Well,
but
individually.
Individually. You can probably do it.
If everything was floating, then wouldn't nothing be floating?
That's just space.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, isn't everything floating anyway? Because we can't touch anything because there's, like, atoms between us and anything. So at any given moment, we're not actually touching anything.
Yeah, it's a really good point you bring up there, Jake.
Yes.
Science.
I suppose if you think about it that way, because we're not actually touching anything, yes, we are floating. But sure.
Proof my point.
Sure. Okay.
Don't need a magnet to do that. That's just, that's au naturale right there. Doing it by myself.
So.
Have you got a degree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason we can magnetically levitate anything is because everything is at least a little bit magnetic. Not in the same way that ferromagnetic things are magnetic, like iron and most magnets you know about. It's just a tiny, tiny little bit. Like millions of times less magnetic than, say, iron. But everything's still a little bit magnetic.
Tiny little bit. Is that why people can... I know some people have the ability to like stick spoons to their skin.
Oh,
is that why, or is that just
I think that I, isn't that reason? About having like high iron levels?
Maybe.
I think that's what that is. And then like that people have that thing where like electronics don't work around them because of like something biological. Yeah, no, that it's a thing.
It's actually a thing.
Whoa. If you meet someone and they just seem like really bad at technology or like things like keep breaking around them, it's like an actual thing. I don't know how legit it is, but I've read an article about how like it's something to do with you on a biological level that means like electronics do actually mess up around
you.
I think someone just wrote that article to make themselves feel better.
Maybe there's shit technology.
I mean, like, I find a lot of comfort
actually,
in that
because technology breaks around me.
No, like, I'm really bad at technology, so I take a lot of comfort in that. That's but probably why.
Can I just point out that
we went best job?
You're not biologically incapable with technology. You're just
I think I am at a biological disadvantage. It's something that I can't help. It's out of my control.
The other day, I had to help Jake set up their computer because it wouldn't work. Turned out they were trying to plug a cable into the wrong hole.
Well, listen, the first time I went to
was
plug
that
it
wrong?
No, the first time I went to plug it into the hole, I guess I just came at it at the wrong angle and I thought it didn't fit. So I was like, oh, maybe it's the other hole then. So I put it in that hole. We ended up like cracking off the side of my computer, checking nothing was broken. I was having like a full meltdown. And then Corey's just like, have you tried that one? And I'm like, no, it doesn't work. Plugs it in. Everything's fine. I think I'm just
literally
dumb, to be
first
honest.
Try.
That's such a you thing.
It really is.
Yeah, you're biologically incapable. Okay.
No, it's because it's a condition.
Back to the magnets.
Oh yeah, I forgot we were here for.
Yeah, that's what we're here for. Obviously, there are quite a lot of applications for that. If we can levitate small objects, we can simulate anti-gravity without actually having to send anything to space.
Oh, good point.
Yeah, so we can have microgravity
good point.
Environments without putting anything in space. Just use a big magnet. Chuck it in a magnet.
Big ass magnet.
Yeah. Which is really, really cool, because getting to space is really, it's really hard.
It is quite hard.
And very dangerous, as we've spoken about far too many times on this podcast.
Could we use one of those little magnet-y machines to, like, you know how you used to have, like, those moon shoes, where they were basically just, like, trampolines strapped to your feet? Could you do the same thing with this, and then, like, make humans, like, float, like... Is that possible?
Put magnets on your feet.
Yeah, kind of, but just like really smart, strong magnets that like repel
the earth.
The ground.
Yeah.
So you could, that's kind of how maglev trains work, but you'd have to have the right flooring. So did you see that hoverboard that was going around? A while ago. So how that works is essentially you've got a super cooled superconductor and the right kind of flooring, and they will repel each other. So long as the superconductor remains super cooled. Technically do that.
Can't we do it just like on any floor or like on water so we can like walk on water? Because that would be really dope.
No.
I just want to float.
Well, if you've seen Back to the Future, you'll actually know that hoverboards don't work on water.
They don't. Yeah, that's
they
true.
Don't.
I'm saying if we get like smarter science so we can
so
do
magnetize
it on water.
The water.
Yeah.
I mean, not with this. No. Well, I'm not going to say no.
I'm disappointed.
You could, maybe, but not really with this.
I don't think this was the story for me, really.
No, I'm sorry about that.
That's it for this week's.
That's us done. They've actually said that they can use this to levitate larger objects than just frogs. It doesn't really matter how big it is. It just depends how big you can build the magnet. And it's on an atomic level that everything is levitated. So it's almost perfect anti-gravity, or as perfect as we could get. Yeah.
Is there no way that that's going to have a, like, damaging effect on your body, though?
Well, they've not really done many studies onto that, but so far from what they saw, the frog looked fine. The frog seemed okay. I haven't read anything that said that the frog exploded or got cancer.
Did they cut it open to find out?
No, I think they cut it open. They must have cut it open.
Yeah.
Otherwise, sure. We wouldn't know.
We have no way of telling how healthy something is without cutting it open. That's why every time you go to the doctors, you get they split cut you open.
Exactly. That's what they did to me.
That was different.
No, it wasn't.
That was...
Nope.
For...
50% of this house.
For everyone listening, I'm not even going to go into it. No.
I am trans, and they sliced me open for fun just to make sure I was okay on the inside.
Just to make sure you're really trans.
Yeah, just to make sure I'm really trans. Before this that, I was just a trender.
So this is diamagnetic levitation, and that was first discovered in 1939 when tiny bits of graphite and bismuth. Do you guys know what bismuth is?
Bismuth. We talked about it before.
We did talk about bismuth.
It's metal, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like rainbow. It's like rainbow metal.
Oh, I love that stuff.
I'll show you a picture.
Just really like because it's rainbow, but yeah. That's fine.
Yeah, it's like a little rainbow metal.
Oh, I love that stuff. That stuff is
so pretty.
So obviously, 50 years later, physicists from Grenoble lifted several organic materials using diamagnetic force.
Grenoble. Yeah, it's like granola.
It's cereal you get from Chernobyl. Yeah. So Geim obviously discovered that he could do that with water. And then, as I said, quite a lot of scientists, 90% didn't believe it. So he levitated the frog and proved that diamagnetic levitation is possible with living organisms.
He proved them wrong, didn't he?
He really showed them.
Showed them, scientists.
Have I explained to you guys, do you guys understand how the frogs float?
No.
But magnetically.
It's like they put some really strong big magnets in a box and put the froggy in it, and the froggy is a little bit magnetic, so it goes...
Okay, that's close enough, yeah. Yeah.
See? That's just what I assume, given the very limited information you've given me.
See, you have learned.
I mean, I'm
limited
just...
Limited information.
I'm filling in some blanks. You've said a lot of long science-y words, and I've just been like, yeah, cool. Yes.
Okay. So I'll break it down a little more. If you put an atom... or a larger piece of matter, which is just lots and lots of atoms in a magnetic field, the electrons that are inside them won't really like it. So they'll then start to...
Not having it.
No, they're not having it. So they change their motion in a way that opposes the force of the magnetic field. So that's essentially how that works. The electrons in all the atoms get pissed off at the magnetic field and kind of repel it.
Screw you.
And that pretty much happens across everything. But not... Some things, like iron, they quite like magnetic fields, so they point in the same way. But you don't need to worry about that. Just know that with like everything that levitates, it's kind of...
There's a really great analogy for sexuality in there somewhere.
Come on. Okay, yeah, sure. Iron is gay.
Iron is
definitely gay.
So it's just like normal magnets, where if you try and put two of the same poles together, they'll push themselves apart. Except instead of having different parts of magnets, you've just got... atoms of something and a really, 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 really strong magnet where the electrons are the other magnet.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm glad. So you basically turn a frog into a lot of little magnets in the shape of a frog.
And then cut them open.
Interesting.
And then cut the frog open, sure.
Interesting. That makes more sense about the atomic level.
Yeah. So that is how Geim won an Ig Nobel Prize. Not a Nobel Prize, an Ig Nobel Prize.
An Ig Nobel Prize.
Have you guys heard of the Ig Nobel Prize?
No.
I have.
You should have, because it was one of the inspirations for this podcast.
Yeah, I can't remember how to describe them, but it's the... Not parody, it's like the...
I don't know. Shall I just
explain? Just explain it.
So the Ig Nobel Prize is a yearly prize given out to scientists who publish a paper that is silly, but then makes you think. Like this one with levitating frogs. It seems a bit silly, but it actually has... real world applications. So previous ones that people have won for are things like someone proving that cats are liquid.
You fill the space that you put them in.
Yeah, so you put a cat in a thing.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I love that.
They are liquid.
Yeah, so they worked out the shear forces, which we've talked about before, which are like the forces of like movement in a liquid in cats. Mm-hmm. And the pressures that cats work under. It was actually a really interesting read, to be perfectly honest. And it had pictures as well.
It had pictures.
It did.
Pictures of cats.
So that made André Geim one of the only people to have won the Ig Nobel Prize and a Nobel Prize.
That's beautiful. I love that for him.
Yeah, which is the equivalent of winning like an Oscar and a Razzie.
And a Razzie.
So this is an example.
Good for him.
Good for him.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's 60. Oh. Yeah, he's still kicking about. Yeah.
He's not even that old.
That was the thing. When he wrote his autobiography, he was like, I don't really want to write this until I'm dead. Because I've still got stuff to do.
Well, you can't write it when you're dead.
Yeah, but that's kind of...
It's a bit late.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the point. He didn't really want to do anything until he died. This is an example of Friday Night Experiments, which is essentially Gaim's name for a kind of crazy or wild thing that probably won't pan out. But if they do, it would be really, really interesting and surprising. So
happens on Fridays.
Exactly. So he has apparently, since the start of his career, devoted 10% of his time to doing these kind of weird, just silly things.
Okay, what else has he done then? Have I got a list of other things he's tried?
I don't have a list of other things that everything he's tried. I've got a list of some things that have worked. So there's gecko tape, and also...
Gecko tape.
Do you guys ever get... I'll talk about it later.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm going to go into it. Okay. And there's also graphene, but we'll get to that later as well. Don't worry. So Friday Night Experiments are just so outlandish that they try and limit the amount of time that people work on them, because they're not funded, and if you spend too long on it, it will basically mess up your career. Mm. Because you're working needlessly on something that's quite pointless. But because they do just do things that people wouldn't normally think of, they do sometimes lead to quite interesting discoveries. So they've got about a 12.5% success rate so far, which is actually pretty
good. That's quite high, actually.
Which is really, really high. Not bad. I mean, if you think about people that work their lives away trying to find a cure for malaria, I mean,
yeah.
Like, success rate on that is still zero.
That's not quite 12.5 yet.
Yeah, no. So 12.5 is really, really good. He says that they're entering into someone else's territory, and they start questioning things that people that work in the area just wouldn't, because they've kind of got the spirit of an amateur. So they don't really know what they're working with. They don't really know what questions have been asked or what questions can be asked.
Yeah.
So they just kind of go in a little bit blind.
That's a good point.
Which really works out. So they've also made gecko tape, which I just mentioned.
Yeah,
I told you to get back to it.
We've circled back to it now.
That was foreshadowing, guys.
Yeah. What the heck is... Author.
What's gecko tape?
What the heck was gecko tape? Yeah, I'll tell you. Do you know how geckos stick to anything?
Do they?
Pretty much, yeah. They can stick to glass, sheer surfaces.
Oh, wow.
Did you really not know that?
Good for them.
That's one. It's like the main thing about geckos.
Sticky boys.
Sticky boy.
They're little sticky boys, better than spiders and stuff.
Oh, wow. I want a sticky boy.
I didn't know that.
You don't want a sticky boy.
I want a sticky boy.
You get a sticky boy.
I'd love a sticky boy.
So,
not magnetically, I assume.
Not magnetically.
It's very sticky.
They use van der Waal forces. So on their little gecko hands, they've got tiny, tiny little hairs, essentially, that are microscopic. And whenever they put their hand on something, I say their hand, their little gecko hand on something, those tiny, tiny little hairs interact with the atoms of whatever they're touching.
Oh.
And there's tiny little forces, but when they build up, it's enough to keep them stuck.
It's enough to stick you.
Yeah. There. So essentially what these guys have done is made a tape using the same principle. So they used microtubes made of plastic polymer, I believe.
And it's got little microscopic things.
On a piece of tape, they've got a micropolymer, which is so thin that it essentially acts in the same way as these geckos' tiny, tiny little hairs.
Yeah.
Supposedly, it's enough that you can cover your hand with it and stick yourself to the ceiling.
Whoa.
Which is...
Don't try it at home.
Don't try that at home.
So they basically just made some, like, really, really strong tape using some, like, probably unnecessary, complicated, like, scientific process of studying a gecko's fucking hand.
What?
Like, I don't get the point of, like, going that far just to make really strong tape.
I don't think you understand how strong this is.
It's sticky.
It's not like duct tape. You can't, like, you won't be able to just tear this off. This can, you can probably, if you have the right, if you use it in the right way, you could scale a building with it. But like Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible.
Isn't it also really dangerous? Because what if you get it stuck somewhere you don't want it stuck and then you can't get it off?
There's a method of... Well, obviously geckos can take their hands off.
Yeah,
so there's a method of...
You know, we're not geckos. It's tape. It's an inanimate object.
Right, but my point being that if you pull it off in the right way, you're able to remove it.
It will unhook, like unstick.
So with tape uses adhesive, which is a chemical thing. So it's sticky because of a chemical. And when you pull that off, you've got residue and you can't really use it again. Whereas this tape is reusable in terms of you can put it on a surface, stick something together, and then if you take it off in the right way, you can then stick it onto something else again.
That's quite cool.
Yeah. It's kind of like being Spider-Man.
Sure, yeah. I guess.
Do you not want to be Spider-Man?
Of course.
Well, I'm bi, so I could be Spider-Man.
I'm not even going to question that. Let's just move on.
If you want your franchise cancelled.
Shall we move on to graphene?
Yes.
Yeah?
So he invented graphene.
So he kind of discovered graphene. Do you guys know what graphene is?
Is it like graphite in caffeine?
No, but it is close. It is made from graphite.
Good guess.
You know what? I went there. I gave it a go.
You really went out there. Graphene is an allotrope of carbon. Allotropes are essentially different structural modifications of an element. So you look very confused.
Is it like a different way of structuring the same element?
Yeah, so it's an element in a different form. But in
the same way that last week in the live episode, we were talking about protein folding, where it's just like a different form of the same thing.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, so an allotrope of... with allotropes of carbon, you've got diamond and graphite.
Yeah, true.
Right. Different okay. Coal. You know?
That makes sense. Yeah.
Although coal isn't really pure carbon, is it? It's not. I'm a silly boy. But essentially, if you just put carbon in different formations in the same phase, so if it's all solid, then those are allotropes. So, as I said, graphene is a single layer of carbon arranged in a hexagonal lattice. And so it's one atom thick. Essentially, it's two-dimensional, one atom thick, and arranged in hexagons. So it's the basic structural element of other allotropes, like graphite. So that's how pencils work. When you've got a graphite pencil, you kind of just rub off layers of essentially graphene onto the paper.
Yeah.
Charcoal, carbon nanotubes, those are all basically made up of graphene. And you can think of it as an indefinitely large aromatic molecule. Do you guys know what an aromatic molecule is?
Absolutely not.
I'm big dumb boy. I know nothing big about science.
That's right. I've got exactly here what an aromatic is. So an aromatic is essentially isn't a ring. A
type of duck.
No.
Aromantic.
Aromantic. Aromantic duck. Yes.
An aromatic molecule is a ring-shaped molecule of carbon atoms connected together, where the electrons in the middle are kind of just dislocated, so they just kind of they don't sit in one particular place, they just move around.
Okay.
Which makes it really strong.
Okay.
You following me?
Yeah.
I can visualize it, yeah.
Yeah, so six carbon atoms arranged in a ring, and then some electrons just bounce around the middle.
Yeah.
So that makes them really stable, they don't really break apart, and they don't really react with other substances either. Mm. They're pretty strong. And they're called aromatic molecules because the first ones that were discovered smelled like stuff.
Okay, that makes sense then.
Yeah. That's literally the only reason. Like, aroma.
I really want some duck now. I'm starving.
Duck. So, if you take it thickness by thickness, proportionally, it's 100 times stronger than the strongest steel. Hmm. So, it's nothing to sniff at. And it conducts heat and electricity very efficiently, and it's nearly transparent. Which means you can cover things in it and make them very electrically conductive. Because
that's
it's so
really,
conductive.
Really cool.
It's really cool.
That and seems like it would have so many uses.
Yeah, it's got so many uses. If you look at the Wikipedia page.
I have a feeling we've got a list coming up.
I'm not going to give it because it is genuinely too long. But if you want to start like researching this, just look at the Wikipedia page and see how long just the section on uses is.
Yeah.
Because it's a few pages long. There are lots and lots of uses for this. But not many of them have been realized yet. Because it's still kind of expensive to produce, and produce on such a large scale.
Because it's such a specific structure. Is that why?
Yeah, it's because it's two-dimensional, so it's hard to get just that one atom thickness.
Yeah.
Or it's not so much that it's hard to get it, it's hard to get it on a large scale.
Yeah.
So I'm going to let you guys know how they isolated graphene, which basically means how did they get the one atom thick structure. So, Geim and this man called Novozelov, they found graphene on some graphite from a pencil, essentially.
Makes sense.
They isolated it using scotch tape, like I said. So, the physicists had never worked with carbon before, and the team worked for long hours just to familiarize themselves with the literature, and they also decided not to try and read too much because they didn't want to know too much, because they didn't want to know what had been done and what not to do. This basically all began when Geim asked a doctoral student from China named Da Jiang, good pronunciation, I'm sure, to polish a piece of graphite an inch across and a few millimeters thick down to 10 microns using a very special machine. And because there was a bit of a language barrier, the student actually just ground it into dust, essentially.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Which is not the thinness that he wanted. People in the lab were also observing graphite and scanning it using tunneling microscopy. Which is STM, scanning tunneling microscopy. Mm-hmm. The experimenters would basically just clean the samples with tape before using it. So how that works is essentially anything on the outside.
Cleaning with tape.
Yeah, so anything on the outside of the graphene, you just stick some tape on it and pull it off, and it's on the tape.
So someone's job was to just like sell a tape a pencil for a few hours.
I mean,
that seems like, is that what being a scientist is? You just put some tape on a pencil a bunch of times. Like,
being an intern is.
I don't think they hired one person just to do that. I mean, like,
I mean, what? That's even worse. You've got multiple people
doing it,
and you know, they come home from work and their partner's like, "Oh, what do you do at work today, honey?" And they're like, "Sellotaped a pencil."
What I mean is,
you got a degree to do that. I can do that. I could go out and do that right now.
Love.
Does that make me a scientist?
The person doing the sellotaping probably. The person doing the sellotaping.
Some sellotape there.
Give me a pencil. Give me some sellotape. I'm a scientist. Where's my PhD?
The person doing the sellotaping probably had other jobs as well. Is my point.
Oh, so there wasn't multiple people doing the sellotaping. Okay.
No, there were multiple people studying the graphite.
Well.
Yeah, sorry to burst your bubble.
Just when you said they didn't just hire one person to sell pencils.
They didn't hire one person
like
just to sellotape
multiple people.
Still, they hired someone to sellotape a pencil. That's the point I'm trying to make.
No, they hired someone.
That's your
job. Hired someone to study graphite. Part of that is cleaning it.
Yeah, like one day you come into work and it's like, oh, will I be making a groundbreaking discovery today? No, tape on a pencil.
I feel like you have a fundamental misunderstanding to how labs work. It's not like shift work where you come in, it's like, I'm on the bar, am I on the... No, like you come in, you know what you're going to be studying.
Yeah, but still, you know, someone's got to be like lumped with that job. Someone, you know...
Someone who lumped themselves with that job.
Someone realised that they had to do that in order to make any progress. And someone was like, okay, now it's your job to do...
It's a 5-minute job, really, isn't it? It's just sticking to...
Yeah, but you got a PhD for all that. Love, you wasted your time.
Get a refund.
Sure. I mean, we could just sellotape some pencils at home, can't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Same difference. So, what they did was they apparently picked up the tape from the bin and found that the flakes of graphite on that were finer and thinner than the ones they'd made using the machine. Which is ridiculous, because this is a ridiculously expensive machine, and they did it better with some tape.
So now that one person who thought their job was the most miserable job in the world was the most important and fundamental part of this discovery. Putting tape on a pencil, who knew? You're a genius.
I think you're assuming that they thought their job was the worst bit.
I feel like you're really harping on the fact that this person only taped the graphite.
It's just a funny image to me, and I like
you
to
silly pencils on the taper.
So they weren't one layer thick on the tape yet. They got them to one layer thick by just taping them some more. So now, let me get this straight.
So now, someone's job is to sellotape a piece of tape to a piece of tape.
Yeah.
Get out.
To make one of the most amazing substances we have in the world.
I can't cope with this.
Put it this way. There are people in primary schools that have probably accidentally made graphene before...
Probably
these
every day.
Some kids in the corner eating glue and somebody else is discovering graphene.
Miss, I just discovered graphene. Pulls out a microscope. Oh, it's a perfect hexagon.
So they swapped the scotch tape for Japanese Nitto tape. And I quote, "Probably because the whole process is so simple and cheap, we wanted to fancy it up a little and use this blue tape."
Just want to make it fancy, that's why. Yeah.
This is Gaim. Honestly, Gaim just seems like such a cool guy. This was all at the University of Manchester, by the way. So it was nearby.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, I know, right?
Not in Russia.
No, he didn't even... He's not really worked in Russia. Yeah. So this method is unsurprisingly called the Scotch tape method, which Gaim fought against and doesn't like. Yeah, no, he doesn't like it. No, he doesn't like it being called the Scotch tape method.
What did he call it then?
I don't know what he called it. He's not said what he called it. He's just said, I didn't want that name.
Pencil tapey method.
Goods. So they submitted the paper.
Sticky pencil. Sticky.
Sticky, sticky.
Sticky on the sticky.
Sticky pencil on sticky, sticky.
They submitted the paper with the findings to Nature, but it was rejected. Nature is a big science journal, by the way. Very important.
Okay, there we go.
We've made this joke before.
They didn't go out to the forest and throw it.
I've said this before. Yeah, you made that exact joke last time.
throwing a pencil with a piece of tape on it into the woods.
So they submitted it to Nature, but the journal rejected it twice, which apparently happens quite a lot for path-breaking, groundbreaking ideas.
Did they submit it
twice,
or did they just hate it so much they were like...
They sent two rejections,
absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
No, this is really bad, and actually we're sending you another letter to just see just to, how bad...
Just to drill it into you how awful this is.
No, so one person that reviewed it said it didn't constitute a sufficient enough scientific advantage. And Geim, being the lovely man he is, later repeated this in his Nobel Prize speech. For the Nobel Prize he won for discovering
this. I feel like it's something you would do.
That's absolutely
something
I would do.
If someone criticized your work.
Well, it's not if someone criticized my work. If someone criticized my work and was wrong...
And was wrong about it, yeah.
It's really funny.
You'd put that on the cover of whatever you did. You'd have that, like, engraved on whatever you discovered or invented.
That'd be the review on the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On a t-shirt.
Yeah, I wear it all the time.
You'd have it, like, with negative stars written next to it.
Absolutely, yeah. Because I'm right still. Yeah. I discovered graphene, guys. I did it. That was me. So that's how they discovered graphene. It seems... You'd think it would be a really difficult process, but it's literally just tape.
Sticking some tape to
graphite.
A pencil, and then sticking tape to tape.
It's not a pencil, bear in mind. They didn't actually use a pencil. It's just the same stuff that's in a pencil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to make, not for, not necessarily for you guys, just for anyone listening.
To illustrate the point of, you know, how
I'm ignoring
basic
that.
This seems.
A pencil
skeleton.
Yeah, but you can actually, so this kind of, just to show how conductive graphene is, you can actually use graphite to complete a circuit.
I've seen videos of this where people complete a circuit with literally the bit from a pencil. Mm-hmm. And it just explodes in the middle.
Well, you could do that, but you could obviously draw on a piece of paper.
Really?
So you could, or not on a piece of paper, or on a piece of whatever.
Whoa.
To complete a circuit.
That's
so the electricity will flow through the graphite that's on
that. I don't know that. Whoa.
And if you get that down to being one layer thick, you could then use that circuit to test the electrical properties of graphene.
Whoa.
Mental, right?
Wowee.
Yeah, so some of the uses for graphene, before we wrap up, essentially, that we've...
I told you the list was coming.
Just some, just like three. I've only got like three.
No, I'm not going to go into the uses today. It's too long.
So uncoated graphene can be used as a neural interface electrode, which is essentially an electrode for your brain.
Good.
It has...
That seems useful.
Yeah, it's really good. It can stay in the body for longer, can stay more stable, and also it makes less scar tissue.
Right, okay.
Which is really cool.
Okay.
Yeah, so soon you'll have graphene in your head.
Love
you specifically.
That.
Wow.
So that can be used to restore sensory function or motor disorders in paralysis or people with Parkinson's disease.
Oh, that's really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And since it's basically transparent and a good conductor, you can use it to make transparent touchscreens, light panels, or maybe even solar cells.
That's cool.
Which is really cool. Then also, again... The last one, if you mix it into plastics, like I said, you can turn them into conductors of electricity while making them more heat resistant and mechanically robust, which essentially means they're just stronger.
Yeah.
Physically. Yeah.
That is quite a few uses.
Yeah, and that means that you can make super strong materials, which are thin, elastic, lightweight, and really conductive. So you could use that in satellites, airplanes, cars, all that stuff. Yeah, so graphene's going to change the world one day. Hopefully.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah, the only issue
that's like a really diverse range of different uses.
Cool. Yeah, you can use it for anything, supposedly. The only issue is that while we can make it using scotch tape and a pencil, it's not really enough to cover a car in it. You know? The issue being it's that we true. Don't have enough, we don't have an actual way of making it on an industrial scale.
I mean, is this not like the next, like, entrepreneurial thing that needs to happen? Is like, if you're really, really dedicated to making a lot of money, you could just sit there with a piece of tape and a pencil making graphene, and you know, when you've got enough to cover a car, you're like, suddenly I'm rich.
Self-made billionaire.
There you go. That's it.
How did you get rich? Well, I just sat in my office, got a piece of sellotape, started sticking it to pencils and stuff. Eventually covered a car in it. Shame.
This is like the new YouTube sensation. Stop filming yourself in your bedroom. Start sticking
covering
tape
my
to
car in one layer of this, graphene challenge.
That's it. I'm going to start ASMR videos. ASMR videos of just me, tape and pencils, and then tape and
that
tape.
That might kick
that's
off.
That's two
you
birds
know.
With one stone.
That might kick off.
Yeah, I've called it. Again, I'm just changing the world with my.
And then years down the line, when you finally got enough, you can be like, I saved all of it. All this tape was for a reason.
And by that point, they'll have discovered a better way of producing graphene, and you'll be penniless.
No.
That is the show.
Yay! We learned it.
We learned. What did you guys learn? What did you learn, Jake?
I learned that they made a frog float and then cut him open, and then I learned that some guy got paid to stick tape to a pencil.
Yeah, good. Good.
And that tape is now on cars and stuff.
Okay, not true, but yeah, that's fine. Good.
It's going to be on cars, though.
Yeah.
Champ?
I learned, well, firstly, I learned that anything can float magnetically.
Mm-hmm.
And that on an atomic level, you can make things. You can turn things into magnets, which is quite cool. Then towards the end, I learned that you can make a circuit with just by drawing with a pencil.
Yeah.
Which is quite cool.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
That's quite cool.
Anything you want to plug, Jake?
No.
No. Who made the same joke?
Daniel J. Layton.
Yes.
Thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave a nice wee review? Find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Or send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCory everywhere. You can
follow me at Champkin everywhere.
You can follow me at JakeFTMagic everywhere.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.